This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I had a very nice chat with Ted before we start, and I hope this episode be a great episode for everyone to listen to. So I would like to welcome Ted, and please let us know about yourself a little bit, about the company, and we will take it from there.
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Ted Elliott. I'm the CEO of a company called Capato. Capato works in the DevOps, robotics, and AI space. Primarily in the Salesforce ecosystem, but we have customers across multiple sort of enterprise-grade software that use our tools. I came to Capato from another company that I sold in 2018 called Job Science, where I was the CEO that was the third partner in the Salesforce ISV ecosystem. Before that, I helped start a biotech company with my father and the youngest senior vice president from Sharing Plow, and decided I didn't like tumors very much. So I got out of that industry, but I'm really happy to be here, and I'm very excited about kind of the state of software, really, that we are in today. It's kind of a magic moment. If you think about, you know, 1990s and the dawn of the internet, we're kind of at one of these breakpoints in technology that we haven't seen, you know, what has it been, 30 years? And so it's a very exciting time to be involved in technology.
And you mentioned, you know, exciting time and the particular age we are from software perspective. In particular, now we are talking about, you know, AI age and AI agents. And as a software company, AI agents can be users of the software, can be developers, can be even, you know, a variety of aspects, even in some cases, AI agents can be, you know, buyers. I have seen in cases that AI agents can play the role of, rather than end user, come and do, make decisions and shopping and everything. What is your take on AI agents, the way that you feel like it will impact or it will be something in real world for your company in the near future, meaning the next 5 years or so?
Sure. So I think AI agents are kind of like the hot dog browser writer in the early days of the internet. We're so early on that no one yet really knows what we're doing with it. We have this great capability, but what I think is becoming pretty apparent is that if you don't have a purpose for the capability, you just have a capability, right? And so this is almost like the early days of the internet where we had this new technology and everyone just wanted to have a homepage. And then you're like, well, but if your homepage doesn't say anything, and you don't actually provide a valuable service, are you going to be Webvan or pets.com or, you know, hey, what's the actual model behind the capability? And so I think when we think about agents, we're really looking at the current state of the market. We're not looking at where the market's going to go. I heard a very interesting talk last summer from Eric Schmidt, another one from Sam Altman, where, you know, Eric Schmidt was talking about the fact that AGI is going to be smarter than we are within 5 years. We really need to be nervous when the computers start talking to each other and we can't understand what they're saying. And I was like, wow, that's a very sort of scary view of the state of technology. When you heard Altman talk, he was really talking about orchestration as being the next layer, right? And so I think that the first question we really have to ask ourselves is, do we believe that humans can be good prompters, or do we think that machines can be better prompters of humans, right? What is the purpose of the prompting? What are we actually trying to get you to do? What are humans really good at? What are machines really good at? And we may have different skill sets. And if we sort of analyzed who can do best what, I think the purpose of AI, not just agents, but AI in general, is to make it so that we can take people who are mediocre at their job and make them great at it, right? I think the age of abundance is really about making it so that you can do your best work in the shortest amount of time so that you can enjoy the fruits of your work, right? When was the last time we thought about using the fruits of our work? We usually think about work-life balance, or we think about, well, when I finally retire, I'll be able to enjoy the fruits of my life. But what if you could enjoy the fruits of your life on a daily basis? Because you weren't having to do repetitive tasks that you're not very good at, that don't interest you, that are pedantic, right? And I think that's where you start looking at agents and say, okay, this is the state of the technology today. How do we leverage this to start making our people their best? Okay. Now, I can tell you, you would ask the question, I think, specifically, well, what about for Capato, right? We're seeing sort of three use cases that people are being their best. One is people do not like to write user stories when they write code. Machines love to tell you everything they've heard. So how about having an agent that just writes your user stories for you? Yeah, you as the human can review the user story to make sure it's right. But what if we took a task no one likes to do, that they do a very mediocre job of, even at best, and we brought it up to being a great job, right? That's where the technology can help people. What if no one likes to write unit tests? Do you like writing unit tests if you're a coder? Most coders don't like writing unit tests. What if the system was automatically writing the unit test as you were writing your code for you, and all you had to do is check to see if the unit tests were meeting your criteria? Right? Maybe even the unit tests were being scored by another agent that was making sure that you weren't just pushing garbage in the machine. Mm-hmm. One of the problems that we have today is that when you look at applications like Cursor, they're pushing a lot of garbage into code because you have not sophisticated coders relying on the machine to do the coding for them, and you're going to get into problems. But but clearly, people want efficiency in boring work. The last area is release notes. Who likes to write release notes? Oh, we have to go find someone who has no idea what we just did, wasn't part of the planning process, is given a pile of code to work with. A developer didn't write very good user stories, who can't even explain really what they did all that well. That's really hard. But the machine could tie all those pieces together for us and orchestrate generating our release notes, right? These are three concrete areas where we're not just talking about 5 years from now. We're talking about like customers using this stuff, and we're seeing what they're benefiting from. Now, if you go to the next layer of this, and I'll get off my soapbox in just 1 second. What if you could orchestrate activity across multiple systems? Hey, I have written the user story. I've looked at the code. I now want to push it to my pipeline, and I want it to do an analysis of my work for me. That's complex. That involves complexity. That's where you're going to need the age of orchestration. You're going to probably need robotics, and you're going to need robots that are instructed by AI and confirmed by humans, right? And that's what that's why I think we're like, we're not even in the first inning. We're like, when I first saw the website Hot Jobs, and it was a regional website back in like 1990. And I was like, oh, this is going to be the next thing. It's long gone these days, right? And so the question is, what is going to be the evolution of this stuff? And we're going to probably evolve at a pace we're not used to, just like we evolved at a pace we weren't used to with the internet. And the question is, what is the end game? What are we trying to do? Are we just trying to get more work out of people? Or are we trying to get their best work? And the problem is that if you have a cut and paste attitude of, I don't actually have to read anything, I can just let the machine do the work for me, you're going to get replaced. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you have an attitude of, I have done the work, I understand the principles, I understand what's going on, and this is allowing me to think faster with better facts, make better decisions, it's allowing me to question my work. Because I really think we've been thinking about agents all wrong. We need agents to challenge our convention. You know, the agent, for example, is conventional wisdom. It's taking the collective wisdom and predicting a future result based on all past results, right? So why am I not using agents to challenge me, challenge my work, challenge how I think, and force me to justify? I mean, it's kind of interesting. We're going all the way back to the days of early Greek philosophy and the challenging of ideas. If you can leverage the computer to be that unchallenging, not, they're not challenging you for your job. They're not going to take your wife from you. They're not stealing your dog. So you can be very honest with it in ways you can't be honest with other means. You could create your best work, right? But you have to embrace your best work. If that makes you really uncomfortable, this is going to be really hard, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the state of where we are. And I think a year from now, it's going to be different. And 2 years, it's going to be different. But I'm excited about where we can go with it. because I think it's going to really be a tool that takes the best people and makes them the same. It's going to take the people in the middle and make them be outstanding. I believe, Armin, that one of the things I saw, I've been traveling on the road the last week, the core problem we have as humans is our lack of understanding of each other, our lack of understanding of what the requirements are, our lack of understanding what the other party wants, our lack of understanding the culture of the other person, what's important to them, right? And so if we could use this technology to make it so that we're better listeners, that we understand what the other person said, that we can confirm to them that we understand what they said, that, hey, if you speak Farsi and someone else speaks Finnish and someone else speaks Hindu with a Bangalore dialect or Hinglish is what I learned about when I was in Bangalore. Wouldn't it be amazing if you could actually read the notes of a meeting in your own native tongue and understand what that meant so that you could contribute back in a way where we take language out of the equation of confusion? Right?
That's correct.
We have enough to confuse ourselves and make it so we don't want to cooperate with each other. But misunderstanding is usually what drives mistrust. Mistrust ultimately drives division. Division ultimately drives failure, right? That's what I think the possibility of the technology is. Are we there today? You know, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But if it makes us 20% better communicators, that is a massive step forward for everybody commercially and professionally and personally.
Yeah, no, that's great. You touched the surface of so many things that we need to unpack a little bit, but that tells us that how AI can be utilized in so many different ways, right? So this, for example, you mentioned, you know, writing by test cases, for example, helping developers on even writing stories or putting the, you know, the release notes together, all of those things. These are all kind of acting as helping you to get smarter as a developer and do better and do more. But also at the same time, the AI agents can be really used as you said, just to help human beings to communicate better, to fill the gap so they can really understand each other better. And that's another way that UI AI can be utilized. At the same time, the same UI can come in and just play as a kind of user. For many of these software applications, the same way that we as human need those software applications to get smarter, to have the information, the AI agents need to use the same application to get smarter, to make informed decision. So in that case, then, for example, I was at a gathering last week in Austin, and the topic was about UX in the AI age, and the way we should think for the future, that how the user experience of these software applications that are designed, we should keep in mind not only human interacting with the software anymore, we should also think about AI agents interacting with the software. And are we ready for that? What would be the user experience for that AI agent to use the software to gain insight and work with the software, right? So there are so many things that we need to really now put into consideration because of the high potential of really how we can leverage this technology. And it's not just one aspect, it's a lot of aspects all together.
I agree. I think the issue is that I heard another interesting talk one time with a guy who had tracked Big Blue playing chess against humans. And what was so interesting about it was there was only one thing that was in common over like 30 years of the machine playing humans in chess, which is a human being had to move the chess piece for the machine. And the problem that this team was trying to solve was how could you get a robot to actually move the chess piece? Instead, the computer could give the command and not a human would move the chess pieces, but a robot would be. And it turned out that used more computing power than figuring out how to win the game of chess, right? And ultimately, the way they had to learn how to train the robot to win and move the chessboard was for it to learn every way to fail. And after a million fails at moving a chess piece successfully, it finally started teaching itself how to learn. And I think what we should probably be looking at with computers is how do human beings learn? How do human beings figure out things? Maybe there's this massive system that we don't understand that, you know, we're part of that actually has a lot of logic to how we operate. And if we could step back and say, instead of trying to teach a machine how to behave, how does a child learn how to walk? How does a child learn how to do things? How do we learn how to fail? You know, if we could take that and teach the machine that way, that may be important. Now, I would argue that one of the problems that we have with AI today is that we believe the answer is more data. More, right? And what I'm seeing, at least in our work at Capado, is the concept of small data is much more powerful than the concept of big data. And what I mean by small data is highly curated information that's highly relevant to what you're doing that will let you solve a point-specific problem. That's the nature of the technology. And I think that will change over time as we start to link together components that work. But so many people want to race to the answer you can cut and paste by dumping everything in Google into Gemini and try and get an answer, and you get garbage, right? And you're like, I can't trust this, and I can't rely on this, and how much did it make up on its own? But your ability to take 75 or 100 or 1,000 documents that are well curated and say, write me a unit test, you have the metadata model of my data set, you have my Git repository, you have my core documents of how we do development at our office that are different than the way someone does it down the road. That is a much richer data set for you to operate off of. And I think the state of the technology right now is, okay, I need to teach you with valid information. I'm not going to solve every problem in the world. I'm not going to be able to discern what is good and bad data. And if you talk to most enterprises today, their biggest problem is the quality of their data is not good, right? Exactly. So you're going to see a lot of failure with AI over the course of the next year, because large companies are going to try and rely on large amounts of data to get answers, and they're going to get a lot of false positives and a lot of false answers. And so the question really is, do you want, and I wish I'd come up with this idea, okay? But I went to lunch like 2 years ago with a German computer scientist who was working at Lawrence Livermore, and his position to me was academics love to create documentation. They love to write papers. He goes, we already know the answers in physics to 90% of the questions in physics. We don't need another white paper or another thesis or another dissertation on how this works. And the more of that stuff we feed in this machine, we're probably going to get worse answers. What if we could be disciplined to say, this is the facts as we know it today. Let's rely on those facts to create basic answers to common questions that we know. And he goes, yes, is there some ability to find out on the edge some slightly different piece of information that doesn't really change a calculation? Yes, there is. But for practical knowledge, maybe our entire system has been based on the wrong idea, which is more data is better. It needs to be the quality of the data that's better. And so I think when you look at what we're doing at Capado, we've basically taken this idea of small data is better, right? And it's a risky position to take because we could be wrong. But what we're finding is the quality of the answers we get, you can trust and rely on, is they're not based on everything that you can pull out of the garbage pit. Right. And so I think that's going to be the real challenge that we have, because I don't think most people have the discipline to put in good data. That why do we have bad data? Because we lack discipline as humans to put in good data. Now, if you could train an agent to go verify data and clarify data and make sure the data is right, but we also have to make sure we don't get into a loop where the machine is self-confirming the machine. Right. Because then, do you remember that scene in The Matrix where he's like, what does chicken taste like? I don't know. Everything tastes like chicken. That's the danger we get into. We need humans to be the curators of truth, of fact, enter those facts in the system. We may have different facts we rely upon that may make the difference between how a Indian chicken tastes versus a Japanese chicken, right? But it's still a chicken nonetheless, right? So I think these are kind of the factors that we're going to have to think about. It's going to change a lot over the course of the next, 36 months.
Yeah. And what you say is exactly what, Mark Twain said many, many years ago, that I didn't have time to write you a short letter, because essentially it takes time and it's harder to really write a short letter. It's much easier to write a long, long letter with a lot of data. And then really what matters is that kind of shorter version that essentially it saves you time, but it's harder to really develop and put all of the points into fewer words. And then that is really what is more actionable, it's more meaningful, and it helps the organizations better. So you're absolutely right that the quality of the data is one of the biggest problems that we have in the age of data. And that's something that probably AI can help a lot, to really go through all of the data and just come back and say, the highest quality of the data is this part of the data, and help us to, just distill it.
I agree. I think, Capado started off as an agile methodology company. that took agile methodology and built a system around applying that agile methodology. Mm-hmm. Most likely with data and with AI, we're going to have to start developing methodologies for how to build the data sets, mm-hmm. consistencies for how to do it. We're probably going to have competing methodologies. Okay. But if you have a methodology and a consistency, and we can train young people and programmers and everyone to like, here's the methodology of how to use this, like any system or any machine, you know, there's, I was giving a talk last year at a university and someone said, well, aren't you afraid that AI is going to take jobs away from people? And I said, did you get up here to campus on a horse and buggy? And they're like, no. And I said, okay, so you drove a car, right? That's a machine. Do you hate the machine because it eliminated the job of the horse? Or is the horse better off not pulling a buggy up a brick road? And so what does that take? It takes a methodology, a belief system, a process. And this is, we're in an unknown territory. And we're going to, what's going to happen is we're going to fail mm-hmm. like we always do. And then we're going to figure it out, fail and figure. Right. And so, I think it's just, it's so much fun though, to be at those early days of these things, because we're at the stage where we see the promise, mm-hmm. right? Delivering the promise is not always exciting as seeing the promise, but we're way away from delivering the promises. We're just at the beginnings of that. And so that's what gets me up every morning and gets me excited to come to work.
Yeah, some people may argue that so far the kind of marriage of machine and human has been a perfect marriage, because essentially machine complemented human in a way that human was not good at. So, you know, calculator, doing 2 million calculations in a second and being super accurate, that was something human couldn't do. And then machine came, and that was a perfect marriage. And at the same time, you know, human was on the decision-making side all the times, and then machine was helping us to make better decisions. This is the first time that now we see a technology for the first ever in the history of mankind that now the machine says, I'm going to jump on the other side of the equation and help you to make decision. And by the way, every year, the more percentage wise, more number of decisions are going to be made by machine. And that's what some people makes them nervous, that now we are going to lose the control and we are not going to be the decision maker. We were not nervous about somebody helping us to make a better decision before, or help us to be faster, better. But now it slips up, hey, you are not needed anymore to make decision. Probably I can do that part as well.
I totally disagree with that thinking. I think it's going to take human consciousness to a different level. I think that we have to first get away from rejecting the organ called AI and saying it's going to do bad things to us. And we need to say, who ultimately gets to give the directive of what we want? Is the machine telling me what I want to do, or am I telling the machine what I want it to help me do? Now, those of us who want to be told what to do, the copy and pasters of the world, mm-hmm. our life is not going to really change, because we're already being told by something or someone. We're looking for direction of what to do with our day. Okay. So whether the machine tells you what to do or whether a human tells you what to do, you're being told what to do. Mm-hmm. Okay. For those who decide, I'm going to command my time, I'm going to command what I want, I'm going to decide what I want, I have now been given the matrix of data. Like in the Matrix, when he learns karate and jiu-jitsu and everything in 30 seconds, I've now been given every library in the world to make decisions faster, but I get to decide what I want to do with my time. My human directive is my intent of what I want to spend my time on. And now I can make my best decisions I've ever made before based on more facts than I could ever process before. But I'm still making the A-B decision. The machine is not making the A-B decision for me. It doesn't decide when I wake up. It doesn't decide what I do. I decide that. I have control of my destiny, but I can make my best decisions about what I want to do with my destiny by leveraging the machine to give me that power. Now, that is a philosophical difference. I talked about, you know, there's got to be a philosophy or a point of view how to do this. Those of us who believe that this will make us our best are probably going to be even better. And those mm-hmm. of us who think it's going to make us our worst are going to probably be even more unhappy than ever. These are actually human problems. They're not computer problems. And they've existed since the beginning of time. And you either have to decide that you're on board and you're going to go for it. Yeah. Are there dangers? Sure. Bad people will now be able to do bad things faster. So good people have to do good things faster. Yep. Right. But fundamentally, people who decide to do nothing will be in the same state they were in before. They will have accomplished nothing. And this is very challenging because it's almost insulting to people who think that, you know, we need to be afraid of the future and damn you, Christopher Columbus, you want to sail around the world, you think it's round, but what are you, crazy? You're going to sail right off the side of the earth. This has been a challenge of mankind, right? What has always kept mankind one step ahead of extinction is people wanting to do better, thinking that as long as we believe as a humankind that it can be better, that we can do better, that we can make things better, then we have hope. As long as we have hope, we're willing to cooperate with each other.
Yeah.
Okay. When we lose hope, we end up trying to destroy each other and steal what limited resources there are from each other to dominate those resources and keep them for ourselves. These are philosophical questions that AI is only going to force to happen faster. But taking it back down to what our product does is we're basically saying, start small, get comfortable with it, embrace it. Mm-hmm. You're not going to lose your job because of this stuff. You're going to do your best work you ever did. I went to India last week. And if you would have thought about a group of people who should feel nervous of whether AI is going to steal their job, mm-hmm. I would have thought when I was in India that everyone was freaking out. No. There's smart people learning STEM skills that are leaning in, and they believe they're going to do their best work. And their state in life is going to only move faster because they're going to be even better, right? And that left me with a much more positive outlook than listening to Eric Schmidt or Sam Altman talk about all the bad things that could happen with AI, is seeing actual practitioners talking about how this was going to open up opportunities for them. So that's just how I look at it. And it's just a point of view, but it gets me excited about what we're able to deliver to our customers.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So as you said, I mean, the best definition, you know, of intelligence probably is more about how to adopt the changes. That's the real testimony to really the intelligence that, you know, changes are going to happen, will be there. There is nothing that we can do about make these changes coming. So the question is how we can really, you know, just adapt and adopt those changes.
Well, and I'll tell you what I did. Okay. I started really simple. I wanted to know what I could do with AI. So I would go on dog walks and I would record everything my dog and I saw. And I would go to AI and ask it to write a Dr. Seuss book. Okay. And I created these dumb Dr. Seuss books that I haven't distributed, but they are all about trying to test out what AI can observe from what I'm observing. What I ended up doing last year was actually taking a 2-day conference that we had internally and all the audio recordings from those meetings, dumping into AI and asking it to turn that into a 7-page Dr. Seuss book about what our business was doing, right? And it's fascinating how it was able to distill it down into a simple set of messages that people could understand, right? And the core message of Techville, which was about our 5 agents and how they were going to help you do your life, was leaning in on these agents to help me do my job allowed me to go to my son's play. It allowed me to go to my daughter's soccer game. It allowed me to do more things, right? And that was the promise that we were basically talking about in our meeting, was how much better can life be by embracing this technology to do your best work, right? And so I really think if you're, you know, playing with this stuff, is go find something fun and personal to you and play with it. Just play with it and see if you come up with something that you didn't expect, whether it's, I want to come up with a board game or I want to come up with an activity. My mother, who's 83 years old, just went to Paris the other day and she's like, I'm trying to figure out what to pack. I said, well, why don't you go to OpenAI and tell it what you're doing, what type of clothes you have, and have it make suggestions to you as to what you should pack. That woman has never been able to travel the world without, you know, 2 steamer cases. And she was all of a sudden able to pack 1 suitcase. Now, I have not heard her call me once saying, oh, I forgot something I absolutely need, or I'm in a quadrant that I don't know what to deal with. Now, is she doing her best traveling that she's ever done before? I suspect she is. But she had to take something personal to her that would be fun and make it work. And if someone who is in their 80s can figure this out, all of us can.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely. And to your point, I had a friend, that actually, you know, he was not using this very simple tool that you can get on any iPhone now. And it's a kind of chat GPT application that you can play with voice, actually, not just typing, but you can talk. And that feature was unknown to my friend. And I introduced that to him. And since then, for the last 2 weeks, he has had a companion just talking and talking about different things, from recipes to philosophy to traveling to, and it's really amazing that how much you can really interact with this kind of, you know, person that is so knowledgeable about so many things, and you can really learn very quickly during that short amount of time.
I don't know if you have children, but I have two of them. And I find that sometimes as a father, I don't always have the best way to communicate to my kids. And so what I do sometimes, knowing that I have this blind spot of how to communicate to my children, is I go to AI and I ask it, here's my situation, here's how I see it, here's what I'm trying to achieve. How would you suggest I talk to a 21-year-old? Or what would you suggest I communicate to a 16-year-old? And it's amazing how it's really helped me reduce the fighting by a lot. Because now I know that if I'm getting into a fight, my first maneuver is to go back and have a rational discussion with the technology so that I'm not trying to talk that out with a child that necessarily doesn't want to hear dad's perspective, and I'm relating to what their perspective is. And that is, you know, a fun way to use it, but also as a parent, a very easy way to sort of rationalize down what you're doing. I wish that some of our diplomats and tariff negotiators and everyone else could use a little AI. The other side wants. Maybe the president could use it. But sometimes we need a sounding board that doesn't allow us to let down our guard. I mean, I think, you know, not to go off on Trump, but I think his problem is he always has to put up a persona of strength, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine if he could use AI to actually have conversations to say, how can I negotiate myself to a win-win situation here and still get what I want? Maybe he needs a sounding board that's a machine to give him advice because he doesn't always like to take it from humans. But I think that's what's the possible. We as humans don't like to prioritize. We don't really like to make decisions, but we're really good at making A-B decisions. There's a reason why you want a naval officer in a nuclear submarine to be making decisions about how much the reactor is operating, because if it goes wrong, you need a very quick decision about how to solve that, not a processor that might start spinning and not know what to do, right? And so we really just need to figure out where we play in this new world and where we can act and support each other.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a question of when or if that we are going to have our first ever AI president at one point. So,
well, I'll tell you, I did an experiment with a university about a year and a half ago where we tried to take all the speeches of Nikki Haley and load them to AI, not stuff the press had written, not stuff other people had written, but just take her original works and her presentations and ask it questions. And it was amazing. We were like, okay, what would you do if the North Koreans shot a missile at Hawaii? And it laid out exactly what she would do and what her process would be and what her approach is in on all of her past work. And we went to the university and we said, hey, we'd like to use this for this university project. And they're like, are you willing to sign a waiver? Will you indemnify us? We're afraid if we put this out in the public that will get us in a lot of trouble. And I was like, oh, and I thought, I was like, the kids were like, oh, we're so disappointed. We worked so hard on this. I said, no, you've just learned the most valuable lesson, which is innovation is always killed by those who don't understand it. So therefore, now you have to learn how to overcome it. And what can you learn from the first failure to get to the first success, right? We have to fail fast in order to learn. You know this from being an entrepreneur. You've got to be able to be willing to fail to be able to succeed, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so what if you could actually game out your failing with AI and fail 10 times before you go talk to people about your idea? You know, people ask me, what did I learn from my dad? I worked with my dad for like 25 years. And I said, geez, I first got to learn all the things that didn't work out in his life so that I could avoid those mistakes. And that was like getting an extra lifetime of lessons. And they're like, well, what do you want to do someday? I'm like, well, I'd love to work with my kids so they can learn from all my mistakes. Now, maybe they don't want to do that. So I'll have to go talk to AI to see how to pull that one off. But the point is, like, how do we get better? We learn, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that if you're in a small business or you're an entrepreneur or you're trying to figure out how to build the next SaaS company, gaming out your ideas with a, you know, create a virtual venture capitalist if you're trying to raise money and give it the pitch and ask it, why would you not invest in me? Why would this deal not be a deal you would do? I get pitches all the time. People are sending me their deals to look at all the time. And I literally drop their deals in my AI and I'm like, why would you invest in this? Why would you not invest in this? What's wrong with this pitch? And I don't invest in a lot of deals. I have a very high standard. And so I will send people back a note saying, hey, I love your presentation, but these are the six things that would make this unfundable. And I'm sure they did not like to hear that, but at least they got honesty and they got direct feedback in a pretty quick amount of time.
Yeah, and that's very helpful. Yeah. That's very helpful feedback for any entrepreneur when you do that. So that's definitely better than, you know, a very diplomatic kind of response with no really point to make, and they don't really know exactly why, you know, it's not moving forward. So that's very good. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, this is really AI helping us to be a more powerful version of ourselves. So the ones that kind of use AI on their side, they can really be a superpower compared to the ones that do not utilize AI. And it's not different than the software itself or any other technology that really helped us in the past to really get better and faster and do things in a much better way. And now AI is that tool. And maybe the attorney that uses and utilizes AI is a better attorney, or a physician that utilizes AI is going to be a better physician at the same, versus the ones who not utilizing it.
I suffered from cancer. I went to MD Anderson, and every time I get a pathology report, the first thing I do is drop into AI and say, can you explain this to me at seventh grade reading level? My wife had a heart attack, and she thought she was having another heart attack. We went and got a CAT scan. We got the pathology report before we saw the doctor. We dropped in there and said, no, you have a bone spur in your arm. You're not having a heart attack. But these are the two things you should look at based on the pathology report, but for other indications, right? And I was talking to the president of MD Anderson, and I was saying, hey, I think there's this cool idea where you could put AI between the patient and Epic. And he goes, well, the problem is that's great when the news is good. What happens if the news isn't good, right? What do you do when that happens? And so these are the sort of the cultural, ethical issues that we'll have to figure out. But I definitely think it's going to change a lot. It comes down to community. Listen, the first area can help us is communications, right? How do I communicate facts to people in a way they can absorb and understand? And that's where I think you can get the real benefits today. I think that will change over time with orchestration. I think that machines will be able to talk to machines in the future, and we got to figure out how we're going to manage that, which is a whole new problem set. But you know, these are good people need to move quickly so that bad people have a counterweight, right? Because if the good people don't get on board with trying to figure out how to use this stuff, we could end up in a dark place.
Very good point. Ted, it has been a great discussion. I would like to also ask you if there's any particular book that you can mention or share with the audience that you either personally or professionally liked it.
Yeah, so I was going to recommend The Age of AI, but I have a book I love called Silicon Valley Way, and I think especially for your entrepreneurs. My grandfather worked at Levi Strauss. They had a saying, quality never goes out of style. This book, Silicon Valley Way, has a set of rules and ideas that really don't go on a style about market opportunity, about assessing whether you're doing makes sense. They're really a set of rules to use to determine what not to do. For entrepreneurs, I would say take that book and put it in AI and then run your business plan through it and see what it says. I think that's this book, Silicon Valley Way, is the one that I don't even know if it's in print anymore. I think you get it on Amazon and in sort of after print, but it's one that was given to me by a recruiter at Korn Ferry 30 years ago. And I use it, that and Blue Ocean Strategy are the two books that I kind of are my backstops for always trying to assess market opportunity.
Fantastic. I appreciate it very much. And again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.